there's pressure certainly within the Aboriginal community for significant powers. The report also proposes an amendment to the Norwegian Constitution, which would say that the Norwegian state has an obligation to provide for the basis of continuing Sami culture. And culture in the report, perhaps one of the most interesting features of the report, culture is judged to include material resources, natural resources, traditional lands, the traditional homeland of the people. So the question is somewhat significant. The report also concludes that Norway, because it contains a large number of the Sami, has a very special responsibility before world opinion and the world through international organizations to secure the collective future of the people. And certainly I think those of us working in Canada would be happy if the Canadian government wrote reports with statements like that about the Inuit and Dene homelands. The report also proposes that the National Parliament have a full review of Sami policy in the life of every parliament, which in Norway is 4 years, and review the guidelines for policy and develop new ones and also judge the way things are working. There's also a proposal that there be regional, that is sort of county level bodies and local ones where they're requested by a minimal number of Sami, and that these bodies would relate to local institutions, and all funds for any of these organs would come from the national Norwegian government. I think the thing that's central in the report really is that in Norway, where many people have denied that the Sami are an Aboriginal population, it does highlight their particular status. The legal chapter in the report is very interesting and is now being translated into English. The second report, which will be coming out probably in a year, will have a study of land rights in northern Norway, and perhaps that's the report that will be most interesting to people in this room, because it will be discussing the Norwegian Crown's rights in relation to the land and reindeer lands and so on in northern Norway, as well as waters, including coastal waters and coastal fisheries and so on. That report will also, as I mentioned, discuss further powers for a Sami parliament. So it's a fairly significant report. Then the final report would be on land and water rights elsewhere in Norway. But it's the second report dealing with the core homeland, continuing homeland of the Sami people in Finnmark County that's really the big one. There is a parallel committee, the Sami Culture Committee, whose report is probably coming out, if it isn't out this week, it should be out any day. And that committee is a good deal more unified, shall we say, than the Sami Rights Committee. And it's expected that they too will make very strong proposals, not only for a national constitutionally entrenched Sami language law, but also, you know, for language in education and so on, but also they are expected to discuss the question of political structures and argue very strongly that unless there is a significant power given to a Sami parliament, the rest is really pointless.
Thank you, Peter. I wonder if we could move on to Frederick Harhoff. Frederick is legal advisor to the Greenland Home Rule Government. Perhaps you could proceed now. And thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, okay. And in return, Mr. Commissioner, thank you for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to provide you with some of the information on the experiences that we have made in Greenland. I say we because I work in the Greenland Home Rule. Obviously, I'm not an Inuit, an Inuk, I'm Danish, and I live in Copenhagen right now. I think that it is important for you in Alaska, when you have to revise the ANCSA, that you be given as much information on the experiences that we have made as possible. Because basically, problems are very much the same, though there are differences, of course, but we have dealt with the same problems as you have, and we have made the same mistakes as you either have made already or maybe will be going to make in the future.
Could you pull the mic a little closer?
Yes.
Sorry.
So therefore, I think that there are very good reasons for exchanging all sorts of information between us. And for myself, I must say also that it has been a very encouraging and instructive experience to be here and listening to what you have said, especially the last remarks yesterday evening about the attitude expressed by Browning Pipestem was very encouraging, and I'm going to take that back to Greenland and spread it around and see if it can grow up. Namely that of, if you want to do it, then do it, and don't expect anybody to especially approve of it. That is the most encouraging I've heard for a long time. I will confine myself at this stage to make comments on three issues. One is to just shortly describe what I conceive of as the differences and the similarities between Greenland and Alaska. Secondly, I will quickly go through the organizational structure of our home rule so that I can provide you with some ideas of what it is about. And thirdly, I will try and come up with some of the suggestions on the basis of our experiences that I can, so to say, help you with if that is of any use. Now, firstly, as to differences and similarities between Alaska and Greenland, one thing which strikes me here when we speak about the similarities is that the goal seems to be very much the same, namely this of maintaining the cultural predominance of the native population. And this seems to be the basic problem everywhere throughout the Arctic, namely this, that industrial patterns carried out from the south are being applied in native communities and thereby, in many cases, leaving the native populations in the wake of development. So the struggle to maintain the highest priority of one's own culture seems to be very much the same problem which goes through it all. And the results that is being strived for seems also to be that of achieving decisive local influence. And I will return to that when I get to the third point in my issue. Also, another problem which is similar between Greenland and Alaska is that of the balance between the federal authorities and the local authorities. To what extent are the authorities transferred to the local communities protected against interference from federal authorities, and to what extent are they not? This seems also to be a very basic and through-going problem, and we've been dealt with that also in Greenland. Thirdly, I think that the similarities is also that of finding a viable balance between local government and central government, I mean, within the native community. David Case's remarks on day one of the hearings here was very much one of giving as much power to the local level as possible. And we have heard other people coming up with issues saying that one should also see to that there be some central authority. Now, how can one successfully and viably balance the need of establishing a body and furnishing this body with some sort of central powers, and on the other hand, still securing what goes on at the very local village level? Finally, when I see to the similarities between Greenland and Alaska, I think that the starting point was very much the same in Greenland as it was in Alaska and also in Canada. Namely that there seemed to be an ideological approach claiming assimilation of the native population into Western industrial societies. And this was the very starting point of Greenland's history when Greenland's colonial status was rescinded in 1953. Before this, Greenland was an isolated colony, closed out from the rest of the world. But through an amendment of the Danish constitution in 1953, Greenland's colonial status was rescinded. And it was done so exactly with the purpose of getting Greenlanders to become, quote unquote, real Danes. And fortunately, I should say, this proved impossible, but this is another story. I only say this because what you have experienced here in Alaska is just the same as we experienced in Greenland just 30 years ago. If you should just make a few remarks on the differences, then it is obvious that being an island, Greenland has definitely certain advantages as compared to Alaska, where there is a geographical cohesion with the federal powers. Also, the demographical construction of the population is different. We only have one population of Inuit, and they form about 80% of the total population in Greenland. We're speaking about a total population of about 50,000 people, 40,000 of which are Inuit. And the last 10 are Danes, mainly. So we do not have any difficulties with Denis or Métis or an Inuit, and because this apparently seems to make the whole situation much more complicated. So we're mainly dealing with one native population, and they clearly form the majority. And there's no risk, at least not in the foreseeable future, that this picture will change. I mean, most of the Danes who go to Greenland stay there for 2 or 3 years and they return to Denmark. So hopefully we'll have this demographical combination going on for a lot of years in the future. I think I will proceed to my second issue, namely just running through the topics of the Home Rule. And then you're free to ask all sorts of questions afterwards. First of all, I would like to emphasize that the history of the Greenland Home Rule was that the original proposal was brought up by a Greenlandic and Inuit committee, which sat down and decided that now we want Home Rule. And they also pointed at some models of introducing Home Rule, and actually this proposal was the basis for what later became the Home Rule Act. Now, this is important because I think that it brought the Greenlandic Inuit in the offensive position against Danish authorities. They were not, as I see it in many cases, both here in Alaska and in Canada, they were not in the defensive. They brought themselves in the offensive by coming up with a proposal saying, we want this. And that was later on approved of. Secondly, the model was approved of in Greenland through plebiscite. So everybody was, at a certain level at least, involved in the process, and they had the freedom to vote yes or no against it. There was a clear majority for introducing home rule at the plebiscite. Only a small part of the left wing voted against because they said that the home rule was not good enough. But this is also an important thing, that having the whole setup approved of through a plebiscite. Now, the main issue in the Home Rule is that of transferring powers from Danish Parliament to the Greenlandic Parliament, or to the Greenlandic Home Rule. This means that the problem of protection against federal interference is very much solved in this whole scheme, because the idea is to transfer powers from one place to the other, so that one area of regulation would be subject to only one authority, to subject to only regulation from one authority, not two. And this is very important. Now, having said this, I must add that it is being questioned, though, whether the Greenlandic Home Rule is actually irrevocable. The Greenland Home Rule has, very understandably, taken the position that our Home Rule is irrevocable. It is, it enjoys the protection of the Constitution, even though no amendment was made in the Danish Constitution when Home Rule was introduced. So we have no constitutional evidence of the irrevocability of the Greenlandic Home Rule. So in the lack of constitutional amendment, which we definitely would have preferred, but that would have taken a very long time because the procedure is long and heavy. In the lack of this, we say, well, the Constitution is open to amendment through customary laws. So we have taken the position that through customary enactments, through customary law, the Danish Constitution has been amended as far as the Faroe Islands are concerned and as Greenland is concerned. The Faroe Islands also belong to Denmark and they also have a home rule. It was established in 1948 and the model applied in Greenland is very similar to that applied in the Faroe Islands. So we say there is precedent of introducing home rule, namely that in the Faroe Islands, and these two cases, they now form a constitutional amendment through customary arrangements. So, but this is being contested. We still have a lot of constitutional lawyers in Denmark saying that what this is really about is just a merely legal delegation from the central authorities, a delegation which can at any time be amended or even reversed without the consent of the Greenlandic Home Rule. But there's a fight going on, and at this stage it is not possible to say what is right or what is wrong. Each of the two parties have taken their positions, and I guess that it is up to political strength and struggle to have the whole thing carried on. At least so far, everybody has acted, also the Danish authorities, everybody has acted as if the powers were irrevocably transferred. Next thing I'd like to point out is that the arrangement that we have achieved in Greenland is very much a political one in comparison to the ANCSA in Alaska, which I conceive of as a very economical arrangement. The main issue in the Greenlandic Home Rule is to transfer the right to legislate to a Greenlandic body under the Home Rule. This is a political power more than it is any economic rearrangement of the structure such as the ANCSA expresses through village corporations and all this. Legislative powers have been transferred and also administrative powers. This means that the Home Rule, which consists of a legislative assembly, 26 elected members, and a government consisting of 7 ministers, have the legislative powers to the parliament and the administrative powers to the Greenlandic government. Now, speaking about court systems, the judicial powers have not been transferred under the Home Rule Act. And one may question this and say, well, what is the Home Rule really worth then if the judicial powers have not been transferred? It's difficult to give any clear answer to that question, because the way that this it works is that the Greenlandic Parliament passes, enacts the laws, and then the courts also in Greenland are obliged to follow these laws and obliged to sentence punishments according to the provisions in the laws carried out and enacted by the Greenlandic authorities. Secondly, to this problem of court systems, I should add that the court system in Greenland varies very much from ordinary court system, at least in Denmark, because the population is scattered along the coast in small settlements consisting of from 30 people up to 200 people mainly. And then, of course, there are also a number of villages and a few cities. In each of the small settlements and villages, one would find a local court, but it would be seated by a lay judge, and it would be organized and functioning only with lay people. The local population choose by themselves who is to be designated as the judge, and each of the two parties presenting their case before the judge can choose a friend or somebody who they would like to assist them pleading their case before the court. Decisions from these courts can be appealed to the district court in the capital of Nuuk, and here, for the first time in the system, you will find a legally educated judge, a lawyer, but this lawyer is appointed from the Danish Ministry of Justice, so he's a part of the Danish legal system. So are the local courts. The whole system is set up in a Danish law, in a Danish act, which dates back to 1963, setting out the specific provisions for the court system in Greenland, but it is all a Danish construction. Now, it was initiated there back in the 60s in order to take as much account of the native law systems in Greenland as possible. So that was the reason why a system with lay judges was introduced. This does not exist elsewhere in Denmark. I proceed and go to what is the main core of the Home Rule, namely that of the raw materials, the ownership to the renewable or non-renewable resources in Greenland. I have tried to translate some of the provisions in the Home Rule Act. The Home Rule Act, I will see to that it be sent to you, Mr. Commissioner, in an English version, and I will see to also that the translation will be safe. Now, I made one by myself last night. Just for your interest, I would like to read to you the section one. It's only very short. It says, Greenland forms a specific society within the Danish realm. That is section one of the Greenlandic Home Rule Act. The Greenland Home Rule will regulate all Greenlandic matters according to the provisions in this act. And paragraph two reads, the Home Rule consists of an elected assembly called the Landsting and an executive body called the Landsstyre. So this is fairly simple. Then we have a section four saying that the Home Rule may decide that one of the fields of regulation listed in the schedule to the Home Rule Act may be transferred totally or partially to the Home Rule. This means that attached to the Home Rule Act, we find a schedule, a list of 17 fields of regulation. I can just read a few of them, like taxation, like fisheries, conservation, planning, antitrust laws, social affairs, employment affairs, industrial affairs, and so on. 17 points, 17 fields of regulation, only very shortly described. Fishery, for instance. Home Rule may assume power over the regulation of fishery within the Greenlandic fishery territory. And the procedure is simply that the Home Rule writes a letter to the Danish government, say, from this date we would like to assume power over this area. That's simple, it works. And then the Ministry for Greenlandic Affairs in Copenhagen sends back a letter, said, okay, we got your notice, and we agree to the fact that from this very date you will have assumed powers over the specified areas. Along with the taking over of each of these fields, the Greenlandic Home Rule Authority also takes over the financial responsibility, which means that they have now, from now on, to pay by themselves. So the costs attached to the regulation of each of these fields, which were formerly paid by the Danish government, are now, from now on, paid by the Home Rule Act, by the Home Rule government. Now, turning to the raw materials, there's a section 8 in the Home Rule Act, and this reads, the resident population in Greenland have fundamental rights to Greenland's natural resources. This was a political compromise which was achieved in the very long negotiations between Denmark and Greenland preparatory to the introduction of Home Rule. Originally, Greenlanders claimed that they be given simply all rights to mineral resources and non-renewable resources in Greenland, but this was clearly denied by the Danish government. So they ended up in a political compromise saying that at least the resident population in Greenland have fundamental rights. Now, there was even some trouble about the wording of this phrase in the 11th hour of the conclusion of the negotiations, because the Greenlanders said that the Section 8 should read, the resident population in Greenland have the fundamental rights, thereby specifying what sort of rights we're dealing with. But Danish government insisted that the little word "the" be deleted from the formula. So what is really left in the Section 8 is unclear, unless or apart from the fact that at least some sort of rights have now been recognized, that the Greenlanders have some sort of rights. The precise character of these rights is yet unknown, but we're starting up.
This is really subsurface resources, non-renewable resources.
Right. Yeah. Goes from the very top to the very bottom. The resident population is the expression used, and this goes for everybody who has lived in Greenland and who has stayed there for at least 2 years. So that means also the Danes who decide to live in Greenland permanently, they are also entitled under this provision. And then Section 8 continues and sets out a procedural arrangement which is to be followed whenever decisions have to be taken about the exploitation of mineral resources. I read it. In order to safeguard these rights to non-living resources and to safeguard the interests of also the Danish state, it shall be established by enactment that preliminary investigations, exploration, and exploitation of these resources can only take place and be initiated according to agreement between the Greenlandic Landsstyre and the Danish government. This is what we conceive of as the right to veto any decision concerning exploitation. Now, let's just take one example. Let's say that, for instance, some private oil company want to explore for oil or uranium or you name it in Greenland. Then they would address themselves to the Minister for Greenland asking for permission to do so. Now, this application would then be dealt with in a joint Greenlandic-Danish committee, and if unity is achieved in this body, this joint Greenlandic-Danish committee, if they can agree on approving of the application, then they will give an advisory response to the minister, and then the minister will, according to this agreement made up in the committee, will give permission to the oil company to go and drill for whatever.
But it's a double veto. Denmark can stop it, Greenland can stop it.
Sure.
They both have to agree for
yeah.
it to go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the theory of the Danish government's veto based on the Danish government's power of government or because the Danish government is thought to own the underlying resources?
Private ownership does not exist in Greenland. This is one of the differences that I would be coming to next. We don't have in Greenland at all private proprietary rights to land in Greenland. All the soil, the underground, the land is so to say owned by the state.
The realm. Oh, I know, but which government embodies the state's power? Is that the Danish government, you mean?
The resources arrangement sets up a procedure to be followed when decisions have to be taken about exploitation or of resources in Greenland. But this is, as I said, this is just a procedure to be taken, and it does not deal with the rights of who owns these resources. This was also reflected in the wording of the Section 8 that I read to you right before, that the resident population in Greenland have fundamental rights. What does this mean? Nobody knows yet. Only that at least the Danish government cannot unilaterally decide anything in Greenland concerning the exploitation of resources without the consent of the Greenlandic Home Rule. Neither can the Greenlandic Home Rule decide anything unilaterally against the consent of the Danish government. So they're tied up, you know, in a balance of powers against each other or with each other.
Agreed.
Frederick, what happens if, say, an oil company comes in and drills some oil? Now, who does it pay when it drills that oil? In other words, who gets the royalty from the oil?
The royalty, now there has been the first case of decision in this joint Greenlandic Danish body was taken here recently, just a month ago, concerning drills for oil in eastern Greenland. And here's the, I can submit it to you afterwards if you want to see it. It sets out the concession for this business. Royalties are paid to the Danish state. And according to provisions in the Home Rule Act and in the Supplementary Act of Mining, the law of mining in Greenland, revenues have to be shared between Greenland and Denmark. And now this is getting complicated. Let's just keep to the principle that revenues have to be shared. Now, in the preparatory commission, which led to the Home Rule Act, political agreement was made that the first of the revenues coming from oil exploitation in Greenland should go to the Danish state as compensation for the Danish expenditures to Greenland. It costs the Danish state about $200,000 each year to have Greenland. Most of these money go, no, 200 million.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to translate from kroner to dollars. $200 million are the total expenditures in the Danish budget of having Greenland.
The net cost to Denmark is about $200 million. That's not more than taken up for or paid back by resources, by oil development or whatever.
No, I mean, the total expenditure that Denmark has, including the payments for all the officials working, for instance, in the Ministry of Greenland Affairs in Copenhagen, the Royal Greenland Trade Department, all located in Copenhagen. I mean, most of these money go to pay people who live in Denmark.
The total
expenditures are about these $200 million, one quarter of which are given to the Greenlandic Home Rule as a block grant annually. So we're speaking about $50 million being given each year to the Greenlandic Home Rule as a block grant, and this is part of the income to the Greenland purse. The Greenlandic Home Rule also has assumed taxation powers, so they supply also with further income to the purse besides the $50 million that they get from the Danish state.
Well, carry on with you wherever you were when we...
Okay, you can come back. But I hope I answered your question. Yeah.
Oh, David, just before you go on, Frederick, do you have a point?
Yes, I have a question along these same lines about revenues from mineral exploitation. It seems like there's no incentive for the Home Rule to consent, since they would get no greater block grant, I presume, having mineral development in their community.
Very good. Because I didn't end my story. What I said was that out of the money coming out from oil exploitation or mineral exploitation, the first 200 million would go to compensate the Danish state. If there is a surplus, this surplus is to be shared according to a formula which has not been decided on yet. No, it's according to this, it probably will take place in about 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 years.
And that would allow sharing at the home rule level of some revenues, or to just to the Greenland state?
I don't understand. The money will go to the home rule as such.
It will go to the home rule.
Yeah. Coming out from after, according to this formula, yeah.
Is it contemplated that the home rules will be able to, perhaps as a condition of their consent or withholding their veto, demand some sort of monetary payment directly to them?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, some of the revenues, there are so many different forms of revenues, like all sorts of levies, and maybe some of them go directly to the Greenlandic Home Rule.
Well, it seems like the Home Rule could demand a bonus, or else they would veto the transaction.
Sure. If this could be agreed upon in the negotiation with the private companies.
And in so doing it, they could defeat the Danish share of the revenues substantially.
Sure.
David Case?
To what extent does the Greenlandic Home Rule government need greater revenues in order to assume greater powers under the Home Rule Act? In other words, is there any possible or probable connection between mineral development and the ability of the Home Rule government to exercise greater powers?
Sure. I mean, that's what it's all about. But I mean, let's face it, Greenland still belongs to Denmark in some way or the other, and it does so because it's not yet a fully viable, economically viable society. We're stressing as much as we can the importance of having redone the industrial patterns in the fisheries sector in order to become as much independent from revenues from mineral resources as possible. So, and try to develop our fisheries to the largest possible extent in order to collect revenues from this source. On the long run, it is clear that whenever the resources, the flow of money following from mineral resources gets big enough to pay for Greenland's total expenditures. And
Frederick,
at that point, we may talk about independence, I don't know, but I mean, this is far out in the future, so let me not say any more about that, sorry.
I think it's time for a coffee break. We'll take a break, and then you just carry on with your presentation,
sure.
And we'll have some more questions.
Much more interesting.
I didn't want to pursue the matter there, but we must consider all net revenues from Greenland, taxes, royalties, whatever. Are all those net revenues that go to Denmark more than
the. Well, let's take our seats, shall we? Well, we had the a question period before the presentation was completed, but I think we should take our seats now for the completion of Frederick Harhoff's presentation about Greenland Home Rule.
One of the questions that I just got in the break was whether Greenland contributes with money to Denmark. I mean, this is not the case apart from the revenues flowing from resource development. And the fact that the Greenland Home Rule has assumed power in taxation matters means that the Danish state does not collect taxes in Greenland. This is solely done by the Greenlandic Home Rule. Okay. I will proceed to just a few comments on Greenland's role in the international, on the international level. It is spelled out in the preparatory work before the Home Rule that there are few areas which cannot be assumed power over. This is the defense, this is the international relations, this is money, currency, and a few others, but these are the most important. This means that Greenland does not, formally speaking, have the right to conclude an international treaty with a third country, because this power will still be vested in the Danish state authorities. Now, this is causing a lot of problems, because it is obvious that, for instance, if the Danish state concluded a fisheries agreement with Canada, for instance, then the Greenlandic fishermen would be the very ones who would be subject to the provisions in this international treaty. So therefore, the Greenlandic Home Rule has said that, well, if we don't have the power to conclude an international treaty, then we'll at least have the right or retain the right to have a very strong influence in the terms set out in this international treaty. This is the first step. The second step is that we in Greenland, we look to what the Faroes have done. And the Faroes, they have a similar provision in their Home Rule Act saying that international relations are still vested in the Danish authorities. However, the Faroes have, regardless of this, concluded on their own international treaties with other countries in the North Atlantic. This goes for Iceland, this goes for Norway, and goes for Great Britain. The Faroese government has simply, regardless of the provisions in their Home Rule Act, concluded fisheries treaties with these countries. And this has been done with no objections from the Danish parliament or from the Danish authorities. They have just approved of it, or they didn't protest, they didn't come up with any objection
that's,
to
that's
it.
That's on the pipe stem principle, just go ahead and do it.
Right, very much. And I'm sure that there, as the years go by, this will be the approach of also the Greenlandic Home Rule, especially so that within the powers that we have assumed, we will, I think, try at least to take the approach of just doing it and then see what happens. But this may not be fully legally, but dealing with the international sphere, Greenland is withdrawing from the European Community, the EEC. We became a member of the European Economic Community along with Denmark in 1973, January 1st. And right from the very start, there was a strong disagreement in Greenland as to this membership of this European Community, because, of course, Greenland does not feel a part or even a member of the European societies. So therefore, there was a strong urge from day one of the total Danish membership of the EEC that at some point we would try and withdraw. And as the first major task that the Home Rule government took up when Home Rule was established, May 1st, 1979, was that of presenting a claim towards the Danish government asking for withdrawal from the communities, European communities. Negotiations took place during 2.5 years and have now been concluded. So we are now leaving the European communities from January 1st, 85. A few other observations should be made as to the security role. Greenland is also a member of the NATO, and I think that there's a lot of strategic importance of Greenland's remaining in NATO. So far, the membership of NATO has not been questioned by the Home Rule government, but it is obvious that this may become an issue of discordance between Denmark and Greenland, because there's the very heavy risk of having military bases, of which there are two in Greenland, and they are American. The Danish Navy only holds a small harbor in Greenland, and that is all there is of Danish military presence in Greenland. Apart from this, there are two major American bases, one in Sønderstrømfjord and one in Thule. And if ever a nuclear war would, come up between the East and the West, Greenlanders believe that one of the first targets of nuclear attack from the East would be the American bases in Greenland. And that would be catastrophic, that would be fatal to the ecology in the whole area if the American bases were bombed with nuclear weapons. So this may come up as an issue in the years to come as to whether these bases should be allowed to still be there. At this point, the American military presence is considered as the Danish state's major contribution to the NATO, and they don't pay for it. The Americans do not pay for the bases in Greenland. I think I have run through some of the issues which are characterizing the Greenlandic Home Rule, and I'll therefore just conclude with the third issue that I mentioned, some of the proposals that maybe could be of some interest to you while revising the ANCSA. The first thing that seems important to me is that when you speak of self-determination to native populations, then I think that legislative power rather than private ownership is what is important. Now, this means that I do not doubt the fact that ownership to land in Alaska and Canada has a very great significance and very great importance for the native populations. But I'm only saying that you must see to the fact that you achieve some sort of legislative power